in an instant, my priorities shifted. It's not anymore about money. It's not anymore about status. It's not anymore about the car, about the beach house. It's really about this country. You want to give up your own beliefs about yourself and about the world. It means that you are not standing on solid ground anymore. And that's a huge risk. I don't really want anyone to help me, because if you help me, then I'm dependent on you. If I'm dependent on you, that means I'm vulnerable. If I'm vulnerable, I'm gonna get hurt again. I'm not gonna let this happen. Let me work on it myself.
Breakdown Wake Up is about discovering the groundbreaking wisdom within our most challenging life stories. I'm Meg Mateer, a psychology nerd turned business consultant and entrepreneur. Join me to hear from leaders about when things in their lives were breaking down and to listen for the wisdom waking up. Along the way, we'll explore fresh perspectives like how distress is a driver of success, not a barrier to it, how our personal and professional lives are inherently connected, and how our individual experiences can help solve broader societal challenges. In this interview, I speak with Hesham El-Gamel. Hesham has focused a lot of his career on leadership development, doing coaching and trainings in that field. And typically on the Breakdown Wake Up podcast, our stories start with a personal challenge or crisis, and then we develop or uncover the learnings, the wisdom that then that person uses in their own life and in the workplace. But this story actually starts in the business world. So it's an interesting lens to think about as we bring this philosophy of the podcast forward, that our personal and professional lives are intrinsically linked, that a profound event in our professional lives can actually wake us up to something that is really important to pay attention to in our personal lives as well. Hesham, it's great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. It's my pleasure, Meg.
You are the founding partner of Quest, a 20-year successful learning and leadership development company in Egypt with over 200 clients across sectors like finance, pharmaceuticals, telecommunications, oil and gas, automotives, and real estate. The company offers trainings in character building, business essentials, coaching, sales, and customer service. You are also an advisor at Abrakin, a global leadership and management consulting company. Prior to your entrepreneurial work, you are an area manager for Simulation Sciences and an R&D consultant. You have a bachelor's in engineering, an MBA, and you are a certified professional coach. I'm curious how this background in engineering led to starting your business in the field of human and personal development.
In Egypt, at the time when I was growing up, if you really want to have a good future, you have to be one of three things, either an engineer or a doctor or an officer in the army. Anything else is just considered, you know, like you failed in those three and now we have to find you something else to do. And my father convinced me, and he kind of said, you know, like, if you want a good career, if you want a good future, you have to join engineering. I don't see why you should join anything else, you know, like that kind of thing. And being a very timid and shy person and very fearful of my father, I didn't say that I was fearful, but I said I got convinced. I started working as an engineer for many years, but I hated it. It took all my energy. I had to really work quite hard to excel in it. And while working hard, I wasn't enjoying what I'm doing. So and that kept for about 8 years after the after graduating from the Faculty of Engineering. And I was a good engineer, by the way. I was, you know, like reasonably successful engineer. And we were working on a project for a client, and that project required that we cooperate with a French company. And I went and spent a couple of months in France to actually work with this company. And while I was there, and just before, just a few days before we finished the assignment, I was asked by the project manager if I would stay for a year and work with them because they were short of engineers and they can talk a deal with my company back in Egypt. As a, you know, kind of a formality, they said that I need to do an interview with the head of the department that I would be working with. He talked to me about many things, asked me many questions, none that has to do with engineering whatsoever. And then towards the end, he said, you know, like, you're going to be working with us for a year. You're going to benefit a lot and you're going to learn a lot. And we're going to benefit a lot from you as well. But let me tell you something. They pay me money in this company because I know people well. And I'm telling you, your true talent is not in engineering. And then he shook my hands and I left. And there goes everything I learned about myself and I learned about life. What do you mean? What do you mean I can be anything else than an engineer? I studied engineering. I've been working as an engineer for 8 years. This is my career. This is my life. What are you talking about? And then all of a sudden, all those potential perspectives opened in my mind. And as a result of this, I decided that I will shift my careers and I will have to do something else.
So that something else turned out to be your very own business.
Not at the beginning. I switched to sales and marketing before. I had three careers, one in engineering, one in sales, and the third is in human development. So I switched to sales. I started selling software packages, and I stayed in this career also for another 8 years before I made the final jump into the unknown and decided to open a training company. Only because when I was selling software, I used to train people on the software, and when I was training people on software, two things happened. First, I enjoyed it so much, you know, like standing in front of people and talking gave me this sense of importance. And, you know, like I'm in command and I'm in control and I'm on stage and I love to be on stage, although I'm an introvert, so, but that's another story. And then the second thing is that people would come to me and say, you know, like, you have a fantastic way of making things so simple. We understand easily listening to you. So then I decided, well, if it's something that I enjoy and I'm good at, then why not it become my career? And then this is when I jumped and started my my training company.
It's amazing the path that life takes us down as we continue to follow those nudges.
Carl Jung has a nice saying. He says that he's got a definition for synchronicity. And synchronicity, from his perspective, is he says that as if we attract into our own lives events and things that will help us to grow psychologically and move to the next level. And I pretty much believe this because it seems like I have kind of attracted in my life the events that help me to actually move and grow psychologically as well.
That's a really good transition into sharing a bit more of your story of Breakdown Wake Up. I wonder what this event, how that influenced you psychologically. But let's start at the beginning. Tell me a little bit about where this story begins.
So actually, so this is a big transformation that has happened to me. And actually it happened, I think 16 years down my career in training and consulting. Now, by that time, 2016, I have been in that business for 15 years, quite successful, almost a small celebrity in Egypt because I had like talks on the internet that went viral and I did a TV program and I kind of became like a person who the young people would listen to when it comes to pursuing their dreams and trying to fulfill their potential in life and so on. So this is just to set the stage, you know, like this is where I was when I got one morning, I received this phone call from a company wanting to actually work with me. They are, again, working in the human development field. It's a European company. And they wanted to start working in the Middle East, and they've heard about me, and they want to see if we can really cooperate. And I said, of course, yes, why not? Let's do that. Let's explore this. And then I was told it's 5 interviews. First one, we do it. It's fine. Second one, third one, fourth one, everything is going well. And then all of a sudden, the feedback comes to me through an email saying that while we see you as a very capable and very experienced person, we don't think that you are cut for this kind of work, and we can explain more if you're interested. So in a way, they were saying that I'm not fit for the type of work they do. So now you can imagine this little guru that he thinks that now I know everything and I've been in this business for 16 years. But now all of a sudden this company says, oh, you cannot do the work that we're doing. So they kind of set up a conversation with the head of HR in this organization. She says to me, you know, like, we are in the business of helping people transform. It's not training. We try to get people to actually go through a major shift in their consciousness so that they can lead from a different place. And the reason why we're telling you what we're telling you are two things, really. First is that we feel that you are very guarded, that you're a person who does not share your emotions, who's always speaking from the mind. And if we are to transform people, you have to speak from a different place. You have to speak from depth. You have to speak from the heart. And you have to be able to be vulnerable so that they can actually follow suit and be willing to open up, and then the shift is possible. So we feel that you're so guarded and you're not open enough to do that kind of work. And the second is that because, again, we're after transforming people, we have to really select people who've been through transformation, and we don't feel that you have been through transformation. So how would you be able to take people to a place where you haven't been before? So those are the two things that that we have. And I would like to, she was telling me, I would like to get your perspective on this. Is it correct? Is it accurate? What do you think? So I told her, okay, on the first one, you're absolutely spot on. I'm a person who is very guarded, who puts emotions on the side all the way. It's not only that. In fact, I take pride on being able to put my emotions on the side. You know, like I always brag that no one can hurt me. And the only reason why no one can hurt me is that because I stop my emotions and I put it on the side and I don't let it interfere. So when it comes to that, you're absolutely right. But when it comes to transformation, I don't think it's quite accurate because I have been through transformation because when I was telling her that, I had in mind a major shift that happened to me when the Arab Spring happened in Egypt and the revolution took place in 2011, January 2011, actually, that took place. And in 2010, we were celebrating 10 years of my company being in the market for 10 years. And it was a great year for us, actually, the best year at that time. Biggest profit, biggest revenue. Our clients really are quite happy with what we're doing. And we did have a big celebration at that time. So that was kind of like the pinnacle of my career, you know, like I've achieved everything, money and status and everything. And then in 2011, just, you know, like a couple of months after that event, the revolution takes place. And everything that I have built kind of crumbled within a few months. And we've lost all the money that we've created. We've lost the people that we've developed and we have nurtured. And And not only that, but also I've lost a partner, my younger partner at that time. He was also kind of like my son in a way, because I was grooming him to become actually the person who would run the company in the future. And just within a year after the revolution took place, he was diagnosed with cancer in the brain, and within another year he disappeared, unfortunately. So in a way, I and those two events kind of really shifted who I am, because when the revolution took place, I didn't really feel that I lost anything. In fact, I was ecstatic. I was very happy. I was very enthusiastic. I felt that, okay, so now I can build my country again. Now we can go into the future and help this company to this country to become a better country. And I didn't mind at all losing money and losing the company, and it didn't really bother me at all. And all of a sudden now the big car, the big house, all the things that I used to have has no meaning whatsoever. And I, in my opinion, I feel that this is a major shift.
You were so dedicated to your country in that instance.
And I didn't know, you know, like it's not that I was so patriotic and I knew it. In fact, just before the revolution, I was, you know, like seeing all the corruption, seeing everything that is going wrong, and I didn't do anything. You know, I was just minding my business. But now all of a sudden there is this opening and there is this possibility. And in an instant, my priorities shifted. It's not anymore about money. It's not anymore about status. It's not anymore about the car, about the beach house. It's really about this country. And, you know, like I spent months sitting at home, no business whatsoever, but I would just go and talk to students and I talk to young people and I let them think about their dreams and ask them to pursue their dreams. And I was just, you know, like as happy as I can be. I've never felt as happy as I felt at that time. And for me, that was a huge transformation. So I told her, you know, like, I agree with you on the first one, but on the second one, I don't agree. And that was that. But then a few weeks after that, I get an invitation from this company to attend their training program, the one that they prepared their own facilitators. So that they can become facilitators, and they are inviting me to it, and they're saying, you know, like, there is no obligation. If you want to come, it's totally on your expense, but we feel that this program will, you know, kind of help you. And then of course I decided to go, and the reason why I wanted to go is that because this rejection was kind of like a big slap on the face for me. And it's kind of like it broke my ego into pieces, because here I am. I was, you know, like, again, everyone around me treats me like as I'm the big teacher, I'm the guru, and the one who really knows everything. And then this company comes and says, you're not ready for this. And the reason why I believe them is that because I had this problem that they have diagnosed, which is not being able to express my feelings. And at that time, as I told you, I had this problem of losing my partner. And since he died, I wasn't able to mourn him. I wasn't able to talk about it. I wasn't able to even explore how I felt about it. The moment he disappeared, I acted as if nothing has happened. I went to the company on that day just to announce to all the people in the company. He was really loved. I mean, he was really the soul and the spirit of the company.
Describe your relationship with him to me.
Yeah, I mean, he joined the company actually as a salesman. And he was an employee. And in fact, actually, at the beginning, he was really doing a lousy job, to the point that I was so hard on him, and I was just considering, you know, like sacking him, because I wasn't getting really what I want out of him. But then he was very persistent and very adamant and very sincere, and said, just give me a chance, just let me try, just, you know, give me enough time. And so, and as it happened, I gave him more space, and then he really was able to prove himself, and he was not only able to shift the results, but to shift the whole company, because he was so full of enthusiasm, so full of energy and so full of fun. And he just, you know, like he was a charmer, you know. He would go and talk to people and get them to do the things that he wants them to do. And he was, you know, like able to just, you know, like excite them about the future and excite them about what they are doing. And he was a magician. So in a very few years, he was able to really turn this company to something else. And we everyone realized and noticed the impact that he has on the company. And I immediately realized that this guy deserves to be a partner, because if you are that good, and if you are that dedicated, and if you're that sincere, then I wouldn't want to let you go. Now, on the other hand as well, this guy was always expressing, he's the exact opposite of me. So I am the guarded person. I am the one who keeps my emotions to myself. And he was the exact opposite. He would just, you know, like, he talks about his emotions. He expresses his love all the time. And he's always doing this to me, you know, like, I love you, you're my godfather, you've done so much for me, I wouldn't be in that place without you, that kind of thing. And because I've always been, and that will, I would discover that a bit later, is that I kind of have made myself a promise. I would not allow anyone to, you know, like come into this private space and make me share my emotions. So I kind of, you know, like I would hear all these things, but, you know, like I have the wall build up, you know, I appreciate it, but, you know, like don't try to break the wall. It's not going to work. But he would never give up. He would, you know, like keep at it, keep sending me these messages, keep telling me how he appreciates me and how he loves me and so on. So, and I think that eventually at a certain point in time, he was actually able to break the walls. I was able to actually make me love him really and see him as a son to me. But then again, I wouldn't show that. You know, like I have that feeling inside me, but I wouldn't let it show, because you know what? I'm not gonna let people think that I am that weak. And when he died, then I wasn't able to mourn him at all, and that was really a big problem, because since he died, it felt like a big rock on my chest that I couldn't get out. And I was curious also about what does that mean and why I was not able to actually, you know, like feel anything and so forth. So when they told me this thing, that you have this problem, I felt that, well, maybe I need to shift this. Maybe I need to change this. This is why I decided to go and attend this program with them. And during that program, we were asked to actually start telling stories about ourselves, and we go through exercises that help us actually kind of uncover some hidden issues that have created certain beliefs in our lives and so forth. And it's just during one of those sessions that I discovered that early on in life, I felt for some reason that people are a source of pain. And probably it's because I was an ADHD child. So being that, I'm obnoxious, I'm insensitive, I do things in a way that makes people annoyed. And it looks like people kind of gave me their a piece of their minds when they would see the way I act and the way I behave. And I felt that I'm not safe around people. Whenever I'm around people, I'm not safe. And at a certain point in time, I guess, I developed this belief that people are a source of pain. And if people are a source of pain, you have to protect yourself.
Yeah. Because when you were fully expressed as a child, like just being you in all of your glory, you were getting feedback from other people that this wasn't like some sort of rejection.
Exactly. I mean, I act spontaneously. I act naturally. And I get the feedback that I'm a bad person, that I'm a horrible person, that I'm an impolite boy, that I'm this and that. And of course, at that time, my mind wouldn't really create the link between what I'm doing, because I'm quite sure that I was doing some horrible things as well. So my mind doesn't really create this link between, oh, I'm doing a horrible thing and this is why I'm getting this feedback. As a child, I thought that I'm just acting the way a child should act, but then people don't like me and people are always hurting me. So you create this belief that people is a source of pain, and then you start then, okay, if this is the case, then let us protect ourselves. And this is when I started building my walls. And this is what, when I decided and I made that decision that I will not allow anyone to hurt me anymore. And therefore the wall was built. So you kind of discover that. And then at one night and during the program, we were asked to tell stories about ourselves. And then I told the story about my partner. And this is was the first time really I was able to actually break out and let my emotions show. And that was a breakthrough for me.
Yeah, so it's really interesting because this work situation that you were facing as someone working in leadership development actually catalyzed a personal, it sounds like very personal and emotional shift in you.
Yeah, it was very much the case. It was something, it came to me as a business challenge, as a work challenge, you know, like how come I am supposed to be a facilitator who help people shift and change and grow. And then I have a challenge or I have a problem that prevents me actually from doing this to the full. So I took it as a business challenge. But while going through that business challenge, trying to solve it, I get to actually solve something that is much, much deeper than this. Solve a challenge, a personal challenge that has to do with my psyche and how I see things and how I look at the world. So I tasted the same medicine that I'm supposed to give to the people. And I think this is the right way of doing it. You cannot really talk to people about things that didn't happen to you.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's a great point. I think why a lot of coaches and leadership facilitators spend a lot of work inquiring into their own life experience.
Yeah. I call them, you know, like I have this, I love this quote a lot. It's what we call them, the wounded healers. So you cannot really be a healer unless you are yourself a wounded person who've attended your own wounds. And now you can attend to other people's wounds.
Yeah. And I'm curious, like, so when we go back to this phase in your life where you felt more guarded, both in your professional life and your personal life, like how did that impact your relationships at the time? What were your relationships like?
So of course it was horrible and terrible. I mean, I think that at a certain point in time, early on in my life, I was a horrible person. It's just a very, very insensitive person. Imagine a person who sees people as a threat. Imagine a person who sees people as a source of pain. Imagine a person who whose belief is personal belief. This is really, I mean, and I consider beliefs are the pairs of glasses that we see the world through. So my belief is that I am better off without people. So if this is your belief, can you imagine what kind of value system you're going to create? So a value system would include values like independence, would include values like, you know, like extreme honesty, you know, because you know what, I don't really care about how my words would land on you. So I'm going to say it anyway, you know. Imagine a person who would always try to do things on his own. So knowledge then becomes power. and you have to develop knowledge and you have to develop your own abilities to cover everything, because I don't really want anyone to help me, because if you help me, then I'm dependent on you. If I'm dependent on you, that means I'm vulnerable. If I'm vulnerable, I'm going to get hurt again. I'm not going to let this happen. Let me work on it myself. So you create a person who's aloof, who's aggressive, who's insensitive, who prides himself of not feeling pain. Can you imagine what kind of person that is? But it looks like, or it seems that, despite all of this, despite all the walls and all the things that I have built and tried to put in front of me, some goodness was there, something about me that was still good. For example, I've always believed that despite the fact that I feel that people are a source of pain, my heart tells me that people innately are good. Now, I don't, because when I started working in the field of training and consulting, you cannot work in this field and make an assumption that people are assholes. And they really have to be, you know, like driven by the stick to do the things. If you don't believe that people have potential, if you don't believe that people have potential, why would you work in a field like this? So something inside me also told me that people have potential inside them they don't know about, that people have more inside them than what they show or even what they know about themselves. And I felt that it's always nice to help people discover this hidden treasure and find this piece. Except that I've always done it on a head level, you know, like I'm trying to do this through the logic, through the facts, through the research, through the evidence and that kind of thing. And this is why I was successful to a certain extent, because I was always doing it from the head level and that was giving me good results. But then, of course, when the heart level was opened later on, many, many years later on, it created something very different.
You said that you have this feeling that you sort of deep down inside could sense this potential in people. Do you remember when that sense came for you, when you had that, or where that came from?
I don't know. I guess that the deep down inside me, I was longing for connection. Somewhere inside me, there was a deeper knowing that all I'm saying to myself is just bullshit.
And okay.
At a deeper level, you know that this is not the story. You know that people are good, and you can see the goodness in people. It's just that you are so much involved and is so much indulged in your own story, to the point that you are just trying to make this go away. But it's not going to go away. It's there, and it's pushing you to recognize it. And again, going back to Carl Jung, you've invited into your life that event that will help you resolve this contradiction, this imbalance in a way.
Yeah, contradiction is a really good word for it, because it's like holding these two opposite perspectives. So outwardly, there was this guard or shield, like no one can hurt me, I'll do everything on my own. But then there was a seed of something that was saying, I know that there's something deeper. And the other thing that's really touching me right now is your dedication to cultivating the potential in people. And I have this feeling that you had so much potential as a young child, like in your being fully expressed, and that got suppressed by your environment. So it makes, I don't know, it feels like that there's also this drive to create that and find an outlet for that.
Yeah, well, it's an amazing thing. But one my biggest really discovery out of this program that I attended, and not only discovering this about myself, but discovering that no matter what we do as parents to our children, whether we treat them right or we treat them wrong, it almost always ends up with the child creating a fictitious story, a story that is not really in line with reality. So imagine how many children, or how almost every child has an issue similar to the one that I had. Maybe a bit bigger, maybe a bit smaller, maybe a bit different. But the idea is we create early on in our lives stories that might really diminish our potential or slow us down in life or create, you know, like beliefs that really limit our abilities and limit our capacities. And if you know this, and if you feel that you have something to say to those people to help them actually move beyond this, and you don't do it, then that's a big sin, I think. It's a big, big, big problem. And I'm grateful to the events in my life that has shifted me and that have kind of also made me become who I am today. And the pain in my life played a very, very important role in part. And I'm grateful for that pain. Now, of course, I can say that. But at the time when the pain was there, it wasn't that pleasant and it wasn't that nice. But it looks like it was necessary for me to be able to come to this place and to be able to actually turn this pain into something useful.
So you've had this sort of transformative experience that's you've tapped into a bit with this leadership program. What is your connection, your relationships look like now?
I think they are much, much better now. they have improved a lot. Of course, some you have to also notice that when you spend a lot of time with people and the relationship goes for a long time and it's a dry relationship that doesn't really have enough love in it or doesn't really have enough balance in it, it becomes very hard to really take this relationship back to a better place. So some relations I've lost, some relations are damaged, I think forever, but some relations are redeemable. And since that time, I'm working on every relationship in my life. I have to also admit that when you have deep scars that has been created early on in life, they're not going to go away. It's you gain a better understanding of them. You become a little bit better in dealing with them. But I'm still also holding a big part of that. That young scared boy is still inside me. It didn't go away. It's still here, and it comes out every now and then. But at least now we are talking. In the past, it used to take control and just, you know, kind of throw me on the side totally and deal the situation in a way that will make its fear go away. But now we negotiate, and in many cases, I win the negotiation and I take over from that little scared child.
Well, his fears are legitimate in my mind. If he was hurt, you know, that he still has those fears. And it's amazing that you can be conscious of this part and really compassionate towards it, saying like, okay, I understand that you're afraid, but now I'm in a different position. Now you're acting from a different place and with different set of skills and with different people and different connections, right? So you can take a different decision.
Exactly. And that's what we do in coaching, Meg. You know, like in coaching, we invite people to tell their stories. We invite people to look at their stories and decide whether they still want to hang on to the story or they would like to change it. And if they are to change the story, what would be the new story about? And what would you like to create in this new story? And this is how people start to actually move away from this very sad and dark place that they have in a way also contribute to creating themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's a great point because I think, you know, like we all experience life differently. So the same event can impact you and I quite drastically differently. And that's partly because of the lens that we're taking in those events and the story that we create. So the freedom that you give people is to take a look at that story and say, is this the narrative that I want to continue to hold on to and act from in my own life?
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Speaking of pain, not to go into the pain, but I want to hear a little bit more about like this period that was really tough for you. So like after your business, like it was not doing well and your partner passed away, like what was that experience of rock bottom like?
Oh, it was really hell. I mean, you see kind of, you know, like you see all the bloodlines are moving away and going away, and you're losing your business, you're losing the people who you've been hoping for that they will take your place and carry on with it. I mean, I really fell in despair for many years, because also I felt that I don't have the energy to go and build this back again. You know, like I spent like 10 years building this company, and now it's almost 13 or 14 years down the road, and now I have to start all over again. I have to start this whole thing all over again, build this company again, and I don't have the energy and I don't have the stamina. So I went into a very dark place at that time, and I kind of totally abandoned the company. But the positive side is that I had other partners who still believed in the company and who still believed in me. They were very supportive at that time, very, very supportive. I mean, they just accepted my negligence and accepted my withdrawal and accepted my... me being removed away from everything and not making decisions and not contributing and so on. So really, they've carried the company on their shoulders. And they waited patiently, faithfully for me to come back. And that really made a huge difference. And at a certain point in time, I just also realized that, again, it's the lenses that I'm putting on that is creating all this challenge. So I started to challenge myself also. Where do I go wrong with this? I mean, what kind of mindset that is really keeping me from taking the company back to where it should be? And one thing that came to my mind is that this assumption about me having to build the company again, that's a huge assumption. I mean, who said so? I mean, I've been building the company for 15 years. There are people in this company who've really learned a lot, who've really developed, created potential. My partner, Sharif, taught a lot of them and inspired a lot of them and planted in them the seed of passion for the work we do and for the company that is creating this work. So why do I have to build the company again? Why don't they build the company again? And this is when I started shifting the whole way of looking at things. And immediately after coming back from this program and being accepted with this company to start working with them and facilitating and transformation, I decided that I and all the partners will step out. We are not going to be running the company anymore. We can be consultants in the company. We can consult, we can coach, we can train, we can facilitate, we can do everything, but we are not going to be running the company. And we've invited people from within the company to step in and take the responsibility of running the company. We have only one partner who is involved in the management of the company. And the rest are just some of those employees who've loved the company and stayed with the company through the hard times and the good times. And it's 4 years now, and the company is running without the partners, doing more than fantastic, better than any time before. And the good news is that I don't really have to shift a finger.
Wow. What a transformation also in your style of leadership, like you were just describing before, that you wanted to do things on your own and to control things so that you had the knowledge and the power and things like this. And now you've let your baby go and It's growing and flourishing.
Absolutely. And this idea of letting go really is a big, big sign of a person having gone through a big, big shift in the way they think. Because I think letting go is the hardest thing that you can do. Letting go of your company, letting go of your fears, letting go of your beliefs. It's a scary thing because all of these things are like, you know, like the solid ground that you're standing on, and you want to give up your own beliefs about yourself and about the world. It means that you are not standing on solid ground anymore. And that's a huge risk. That's a huge risk. But, you know, like going through certain things in life, you arrive at a point in time or at a space where, in a way, that's the only way forward. And unless you want to choose to stay where you are and you know exactly what the price would be, then you have to take this leap of faith and do things in a different way. And I'm glad that I did this, and it's really paid out quite well.
It's huge, because I know also I can appreciate all of the effort and time and risk that it took you in those initial, you know, 10 to 15 years to build the business. So it's a huge thing to then let go of. And, you know, even when you've built a team of people that you really trust and things like that. And it makes me think of when you had mentioned not feeling like other people were a source of pain for you.
Yeah.
And yeah. To trust and to really lean on and to let, so you're letting go of the business, but also really leaning on other people and trusting them.
Yeah, it is true. But also, to be totally honest with you, Meg, I mean, part of it also is the tiredness and the pain. And the inability to have that kind of flame again. I mean, you start the company and you're so full of life and so enthusiastic, but then, you know, like 15 years down the road, you don't have the same level of energy anymore. So, and this is, I think, also it's a big thing for leaders and for human beings in general to realize what they are capable of. And to let go of what they're not capable of. But at the same time, when you're letting go of what you're not capable of, please invite people who are capable to walk hand in hand with you. Don't assume that you can do everything. It's either all or none. That's a dichotomy. That's a very bad dichotomy. You know, like invite people in. And let people share, because again, if you are a firm believer that people have more potential, then just let it show. Give them the space. Give them the space to prove that they have this. And in my company, I've seen people who, you know, like the first time I saw them, you know, their potential was very, very limited, and where they are now is just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
It makes me also think, circle back to this partner of yours who started out as, you know, a sales associate in your company, and that you said, hey, this guy isn't working hard enough. And all of a sudden he becomes, you know, the potential future of your company.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if he was here today, he would have been in a very, very different place. He was just an amazing person.
Yeah, given your perspective now in this story, like, what message do you have for the broader world to help with these challenging transition times?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the key thing that I'm aware of right now is that what the world really needs is just more awareness, higher consciousness. And you cannot really fundamentally solve any problem at the same level of consciousness that have created this problem. I mean, this is something that a lot of people said before, but now I'm a firm believer in this. So the only thing that we can really do is to raise consciousness. And anything that I can do to raise consciousness, I'm in it, and I do it, and I feel that this is something that I would definitely enjoy doing until the last day of my life.
Thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Oh, it's my pleasure, really.
In reflecting on this interview, I'm thinking about a couple of different themes. I think the first is this realization that Hesham had during this revolution in his country in Egypt, where all of a sudden his values completely shifted from money and success and business to being passionate about his country and motivating the young people in his country. It's such an interesting theme in these times where we do have a lot of social issues going on in our world. And it is important not just for those of us who are typically activists to step up, but also those of us who are business leaders, perhaps those of us who otherwise have ignored or felt like we couldn't do so much. Another theme I see in this interview is centered around pain and how pain can be perpetuated in a system. So as a child, Hesham experienced this pain of rejection. And when he experienced that pain, he made that decision to protect himself, to put up his wall, as he said. But in him doing so, in him putting up this wall, he stayed closed off, he stayed less open, he stayed always protected, not relying on anyone. And that ultimately hurt his relationship with his partner, who he now has lost and is grieving. And I see this cycle of pain and hurt so strongly in many, many of our lives and many of our experiences where we may feel rejected or we may feel hurt by someone. And by trying to protect ourselves in the best way that we know that we can, we actually do the opposite of what we want. We may feel safe, but we feel less connected to people. In order to let our walls down, we also need to embrace that small child that was hurt. We have to love and care for the part of us that's really scared. And when we do that, when we get to that source, then we can begin to open up. What I see sometimes with my coaching is that when people create these walls and barriers and then they become conscious of them, they end up then judging themselves for having created those barriers. And that creates another cycle of pain, of hurt, and of walls. So it feels like instead of creating an openness and acceptance, there's even more frustration with ourselves by being critical of our own protective mechanisms. I love this inner contradiction that Hesham was managing. On the one hand, feeling like people were a real source of pain for him, that he needed to protect himself, that he needed to do things on his own so that he didn't have to rely on anyone else. And on the other hand, having this really deep knowledge of the potential and the goodness in people, and actually so much of a deep feeling of this that he chose to move into a profession that is built on cultivating that potential in people. And so like he said, like this wonderful theme of Carl Jung's synchronicity quote, by working in leadership, Hesham invited the experiences that would open him more up to this deep feeling that he's had perhaps his whole life, that people at their core are really good. And that when we can tap into that potential in people, great things can happen. I think one other important theme that we can carry with us from this episode is this idea that our beliefs and our own story really shape our reality. It shapes our actions and our behaviors. And what Hesham showed in his own story was that his beliefs not only affected his personal life and how he felt about relationships, but actually influenced how he was making decisions in his business. And when he finally came around to this idea of not having to do everything himself, he could shift how his business was completely operating. He could all of a sudden take a step back and take a rest from the 15 years he had spent building the company. But he had to first look at that fundamental belief, this idea that since he was a partner, since he was a founder, that he had to be an active role in the business in order to let it thrive. So when I think about this theme, I'm inviting myself and also all of you to think about some of these, let's call them foundational beliefs or stories or assumptions that we have that are guiding the way that we act. What would happen if we just completely flipped them around? What would happen if we just said that they weren't true and tested that out in the real world? What would we do? What would we try? What would we do in our businesses? How would our teams be different? So I leave you with this thought, and I really look forward to hearing your thoughts about this episode and any other episodes that you've enjoyed. If you like what you just heard, please check out our website at www.breakdownwakeup.com. If you subscribe to our mailing list, you'll get weekly updates about episodes and special events. We also have a growing community of people who are getting excited about this concept and sharing their own thoughts and reactions. Finally, if you're trying to discover the underlying wisdom within your own breakdown and need some help, we've designed special programs to help do just that. Thanks again for listening, and remember, when things are breaking down, important wisdom is waking up.